When you invest in ETFs, your capital is at risk. This show is for professional investors only.
Hello everyone, and welcome to the latest episode of Thematic Matters. Today, we'll be taking a deep dive into the energy transition materials theme and our new ETF, Sprott Energy Transition Materials UCITS ETF, which listed on London Stock Exchange on the 14th of March. As our listeners will know, the world is currently in the midst of a major push towards decarbonisation. With this ETF, we're looking to provide exposure to the miners producing the materials needed for this transition, be it for energy generation, transmission, or storage. The 20th century, or the oil age, was what we can retrospectively refer to as a carbon-intensive economy. By contrast, we believe the 21st century will be a metals-intensive economy, as countries around the globe push to acquire the critical minerals needed to decarbonise their energy and transport infrastructures. So earlier this year, Sprott listed their energy transition materials ETF in the US. Sprott has now partnered with Han ETF to launch the slightly modified UCITS version, which we'll discuss in more detail today. This is the second ETF that Sprott and Han ETF are partnered on, the first being Sprott Uranium Miners UCITS ETF, providing exposure to both uranium miners and the spot price of uranium. So to cover this in detail, we're joined by John Cimpaglia, the CEO of Sprott Asset Management. Welcome, John.
Thank you for having me.
Lovely to have you here. So I just thought, John, maybe we could kick off by you just briefly telling us who Sprott are and what you guys do.
Sure. Well, Sprott Asset Management has been around a long time. And our focus is very unique in the marketplace in that we exclusively focus on metals and mining. And, unfortunately, a very long bear market in all things commodities, basically thinned out the herd, so to speak, in terms of the number of managers focused on this category. But we were fortunate to persevere through that downturn. And what we're finding right now is that we believe we're in the midst of a new commodity super cycle. So we're quite excited because this is our, this is what we do. And this is what we know very well. And we're bringing all of our expertise in metals and mining to everything from physical commodity funds to passive strategies, as well as active strategies in the sector.
Fantastic. And in the midst of this super cycle, as you put it, you've now launched this energy transition materials ETF. So what is this energy transition and what role do these materials play in your view?
Yeah, well, the energy transition, we think, is a long-term secular growth story. And this is really about the world trying to transition energy systems, mobility, industries to basically be less carbon intensive. And there are real challenges in that. Some industries are obviously very hard to decarbonize. And the world is taking a very holistic approach in terms of trying to figure out how to achieve these goals. So many countries around the world, and there's about, I think, 89 of them, have made different net zero emission target goals over the coming decades. And to achieve these goals, we need to make significant investments in lower carbon forms of energy. And this is really creating a clean energy race. And this clean energy race is being sponsored by many governments around the world in order to lower CO2 emissions in the atmosphere. And this race, as I like to think of it, is going to require massive amounts of capital spending to, as you mentioned, everything from creating energy in more cleaner forms to transmitting energy and then finally storing energy. And governments around the world have realized that it's going to require big social investments in order to essentially crowd in investment from the private sector. So the public sector is basically creating the groundwork with different incentives and tax breaks and risk sharing, loans, all kinds of different schemes to incentivize the private sector to make these big capital investments. And how this all ties back into investment theme of critical minerals is that many of these energy transition strategies require significant amounts of critical minerals. And these critical minerals are kind of the backbone from everything from, you know, building nuclear power plants, providing the fuel for those, building transmission lines, building electric vehicles, building solar arrays, wind farms, etc. So unfortunately, all of these energy transition requirements are quite resource intensive, and the world has kind of woken up to the reality that chronic years of underinvestment in a lot of mining sectors has now led to shortages of many of these critical minerals, and governments have acknowledged that is a weak point. I think the other thing that's quite interesting to us is that governments have also made the decision that they do not want to rely on other nations to help them meet these energy transition goals, meaning that countries like China so far really dominate many of the supply chains related to everything from building solar panels to building components for wind turbines to obviously building most of the battery cells for electric vehicles. And there is a big race going on right now by a number of governments around the world to essentially incentivize the building of onshore capacity, everything from primary production of critical minerals to processing of those critical minerals, and then finally the final manufacturing step of actually, you know, building battery cells on local soil, as well as you know, electric vehicles. So this is creating big investment dollars flowing into the sector, whether it's the United States or the EU. The financial incentives that they're allocating to this shift is quite profound, and we're seeing already big investments being made, whether it's, you know, new mine development for new lithium mines or copper mines around the world, as well as everything from building gigafactories to new you know, EV production lines. So it's a really big thematic that we think is going to play out over the coming decades.
And one thing that I sort of get from what you're saying is that this is a huge theme, right? It's a very wide theme, and the energy transition is not going to occur in just one way, right? You talk about the gigafactories, we talk about the EV transition, we talk about different forms of renewable energy. So I guess my question is, how does the new ETF capture this theme, and what's your approach to that?
Yeah, so one of the opportunities that we see is really in providing the companies that will be providing all of these critical minerals as raw materials for all of these different strategies to decarbonize along the entire energy system supply chain. So if you think about how much more lithium, for example, we're going to need as the OEMs, the car companies, transition away from, you know, internal combustion engines to EVs and hybrids, it's enormous. If you think about how much copper we're going to need to basically electrify, have greater electrification of systems, more cabling, more wiring within EVs, more solar farms, more wind farms, all of that requires a lot of copper cabling and transmission lines. If you think about the shift to nuclear energy, the renaissance that's happening right now in many countries, that obviously requires a lot of uranium. So there's all kinds of different ways to play this thematic. And we think the upstream part of this thematic is the most interesting, because a significant amount of the capital investment is going to have to occur in the production of critical minerals. So the ETF and its index are really focused on the upstream part of the supply chain. So these are the producers of these critical minerals, the developers of mines that were going to provide future supply, as well as a number of exploration companies that are still at earlier stages, you know, trying to find deposits of tomorrow that will be, you know, the mines of in the future. So it's an interesting way to play the thematic. And so what we have focused on is identifying the companies that have pure play exposure to this thematic. We're trying to identify the companies that allow you to, you know, maximize your exposure to this thematic, specifically in the upstream. So what that means is you're not going to have, you know, midstream companies that are building cars or building batteries in China. It's really focused on the companies that are producing lithium, copper, nickel, silver, manganese, cobalt, you know, graphite, rare earths, all the really important critical minerals that we expect are going to see significant demand growth, specifically because of the energy transition.
So, and you say this idea of obviously the ETF is pure play and that it's mainly focusing on the upstream. And does that mean also that, you know, you'll be excluding some of the larger miners that perhaps have different revenue streams?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we in designing the index in partnership with the NASDAQ, we looked at about 800 different companies that we initially screened for having some potential involvement with energy transition materials and minerals. And from there, we really did a deep dive in each company to ensure that these companies were exposed to the correct mineral. So, for example, if you had a large diversified mining company that perhaps had, you know, 25% of its revenue coming from coal, well, we would exclude a company like that. It doesn't mean that it doesn't have some exposure to some of these energy transition materials, but we would exclude a company like that from the index at present until perhaps its, you know, its proportion of coal would fall as many companies are divesting and spinning off those parts of their businesses. So we generally avoid some of the very large diversified companies with exposures to different minerals that we don't think are as important to the transition, as well as we don't include China A-share. So we're trying to focus on companies that are generally in developed markets. And we are focused, as I said, right across the whole mining spectrum, from companies producing, companies that are developing mines, and companies exploring.
And if we look at the sort of the minerals themselves, obviously you've been speaking about the fact that there is this huge demand for vast quantities of these critical minerals. You know, if I were to think about this theme, my first thought would go to China, right? That dominates the market for rare earths, for lithium, for example. But one thing I noticed about the ETF is that the geographical weight in China is actually quite low. So I wonder if you could just sort of explain that for us.
Yeah, well, we think a big part of this story is about reshoring. And basically reshoring means governments around the world, you know, in the West, have acknowledged that they cannot rely, they cannot continue to rely on China as a key player in these supply chains. And I think there is a massive shift in industrial policy that's happening right now. And I can point out a few examples just this week. The EU announced the Critical Raw Materials Act. And this is about securing the critical minerals and raw materials needed for batteries, for electric vehicles, renewable energy installations. Canada's formed a strategic partnership on raw materials with the EU. There's a mineral security partnership that has been formed in June of 2022 that includes the EU, the UK, Sweden, France, Germany, Finland, Canada, Australia, the US. And it's all about building responsible critical mineral supply chains to support climate objectives. And this is basically a growing acknowledgement that governments are going to build local supply chains. They are not going to be beholden to aggressive nations or nations where trade relations could sour and they could be at the mercy of achieving a lot of their objectives. So we see massive investments happening in the West. That's where the investments are going. The governments are basically saying, look, if you want these EV tax credits, for example, it's not about you buying batteries from China. You're going to build a battery that's made in the United States from raw materials that were mined in the United States and the car assembled in the United States. And I think that's a very powerful investment signal on why there's a shift away from China right now, in particular with respect to supply chains such as EVs, EV batteries specifically, solar panels and rare earths, which is another area that China dominates. So there are massive incentives being thrown at companies to encourage them and incentivize them to explore for rare earths, to build battery manufacturing capacity in the West, to build processing of these critical minerals in the West. And I think that's where the big opportunity is, because that's where the money's going.
Yeah, and hopefully that's quite reassuring for investors, you know, who we all saw what happened last year, you know, the outbreak of war in Europe, and a lot of these supply chains that we relied on that were so critical to many nations' infrastructure, those supply chains were absent. And, you know, there was this huge scramble to replace them. So the fact that there is this thought being put into securing these supply chains in terms of these critical minerals and, you know, basically factoring in the geopolitical situation, I think is hopefully quite reassuring for those who are interested in the theme.
Yeah, absolutely. And, you know, like we're seeing governments make some pretty significant announcements around investments in the sector. You know, if you add up all of the spending announcements that have been targeted towards different forms of clean energy as part of this energy transition, we're talking about, you know, $1.2 trillion is earmarked for all kinds of everything from energy efficiency to low carbon power generation, renewable energy, EVs. This is obviously happening across the US, Canada, UK, EU member states. So there's significant capital. And I also think it's quite interesting that last year in 2022, Bloomberg New Energy Finance declared that was the first year when investment in energy transition equaled the global investment in fossil fuels, which was about $1.1 trillion a piece. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty impressive. Obviously, some of that is government driven, but obviously a lot of it is private capital moving to where, you know, as they say, where the puck is going. So I think it's a pretty exciting time to invest in this thematic over a very long period of time, for sure.
And then in terms of the, let's talk about the mining itself, right? Is there sort of a notable ESG impact? Is that something that you consider when looking at this theme as a whole?
Yeah, I think ESG and responsible mining, you know, ESG as it pertains to mining is really heavily focused, obviously, on environmental and social considerations. And essentially, when I talk to investors around the world that are interested in this energy transition thematic, they are very, very sensitive about investing in companies that are not going to surprise them. And what I mean by surprise is finding out that they've got some kind of environmental issue at mine site or some kind of social community issue. And, you know, for mining, ESG is absolutely critical, because if you are not a good ESG steward and you do not have this ingrained in your corporate culture, you basically lose your social license to mine in a particular region. You lose your environmental permits. So you're basically out of business pretty quickly if you don't practice good, responsible and sustainable mining practices. And I think there is a very high expectation and onus being placed on many of these mining companies focused on critical minerals, because investors want this supply chain to be sustainable. And I think that's really important. And one of the things we've done in the index construction and screening is screening for companies to ensure there are no significant controversies related to any ESG matters. And that's something that we think is important to avoid.
Fantastic. Thank you, John. And then in terms of the different versions of the ETF, right? So we've launched a UCITS version on London Stock Exchange this week. But obviously, originally there's a US version as well. And these have a slight difference between them, right? Insofar as the UCITS one doesn't include uranium. So what's the reason for excluding uranium on the European side, but not in the US version?
Sure. Well, we think uranium is an absolute critical mineral related to energy transition. Obviously, governments around the world are finally admitting that there's no way to hit net zero without including and continuing to support nuclear energy, given it is reliable baseload energy that produces no greenhouse gas emissions. So we're very big advocates for nuclear energy and uranium. But we did acknowledge that in Europe, it's still a bit of a mixed there's still a mixed opinion on that. And so for the UCITS version, we specifically decided to carve it out, not to include any uranium-related companies. So for our US listed version, we've included it, and for the UCITS, we have not. But we obviously have a uranium mining UCITS ETF as well with you, and that will allow investors to make the decision whether they want to add it into the mix on an a la carte basis.
And in terms then of the other ETF that we partnered with you on, the Sprott Uranium Miners UCITS ETF, obviously this focuses on the uranium miners theme and this sort of this move towards embracing nuclear power. I wondered if you could just explain for those who are interested in the nuclear side, what that theme entails and sort of the interesting tailwinds this year.
Yeah, well, sure. As I said, there is a growing acknowledgement that nuclear needs to be part of the energy mix for two key reasons. One, energy transition. So embracing energy with very high capacity factor and very low greenhouse gas emissions is critical. The world keeps building out, and particularly the EU keeps building out a lot of renewable energy. And as you build up renewable energy on your grid becomes less stable. And it becomes less stable because of intermittency, or it could be because of climate events, or it could be because the wind doesn't blow for 2 weeks. And so the only way to counter that reality is you need to have baseload power. And baseload power can really only come from three different forms. You can have a coal-fired power plant, you can have a natural gas fired power plant, or you can have nuclear energy. There's really, those are the three options. And obviously the world's trying to move away from coal. Natural gas has become more scarce and expensive. And so there's the opportunity for nuclear energy to be your baseload power source. So it's an important part of the story in terms of offsetting intermittency. But then there's another angle. And this has obviously come to the forefront in the last 12 months, which is energy security. As the prices of natural gas and coal and oil went crazy last year because of shortages and the war in Ukraine, people realized that having a very dense form of energy, which is uranium, that can be stored on site and allow you to keep your power plant running for years is very valuable to your grid. And so nuclear energy provides another key advantage over other forms of energy, which is energy density. Energy density is really one of the key advantages that nuclear energy has. As I said, you can literally turn on your nuclear power plant. It'll run for 18 months continuously. Then you refuel it with fuel that you basically have on hand in inventory. So you're not beholden to the daily disruptions of potential natural gas supplies or the price spikes that we saw last summer, which obviously translated into record high electricity prices. So this is the other advantage of nuclear energy, in addition to being reliable, high capacity factor, high energy density. It's the perfect complement to other forms of energy. And that's why we think governments around the world have signaled that they're no longer turning off power plants that they previously thought they could decommission, that they're supporting them. Some governments like Japan are restarting idle plants. And obviously there's a big shift going on in some countries to build them for the very first time, for example, Poland. And then that I haven't even touched on the exciting part of the story, which is all the development happening right now with the fourth generation of advanced nuclear technology, which are small modular reactors, which we think over the next 5 to 10 years are going to proliferate as they become commercialized and deployed around the world. So we think there's a very exciting opportunity in nuclear energy, and uranium is the key element that fuels these power plants. And right now we are operating at a shortage, meaning that there is not enough being produced each year relative to the demand today, let alone the demand we expect in the future. And that is obviously putting upward pressure on the price of uranium, which has doubled over the last 2 years or so. And we think it's going to continue to appreciate in value as it needs to achieve a target, an incentive price, which will basically allow more greenfield production to come online to meet the growing supply gap. So we think there's a very positive investment case there in uranium.
And part of that positive investment case is the fact that people are increasingly viewing uranium and the nuclear power that it generates as green, right? I mean, the EU Parliament back in, I believe it was July, voted to label investments in nuclear power as green and therefore like valid contributors to the net zero transition. And in fact, I believe nuclear power has less emissions per gigawatt hour than many forms of renewable energy anyway. So that's quite an interesting idea, right?
Yes, and it was obviously a long fight to get nuclear to be included in the EU sustainable finance taxonomy, which became official on January 1st of 2023. But, you know, it was a split decision, meaning some countries resisted it for years. And that kind of reinforces the decision we made to exclude uranium out of the energy transition materials UCITS ETF.
Well, perfect. Thank you very much, John. This has been a brilliant conversation. For those who want to learn more about the energy transition materials theme, you can head to our website at hanetf.com. But for now, thank you very much, John, for your time.
Thank you for having me.